Hey everybody, welcome to the Snapcast. I'm Bobby.
I'm Ryan.
I'm Rob.
And I'm Chris.
Alright, so yeah, we got a new name. We'll address that first. We got Ryan here with us. Ryan, tell us a little bit about yourself.
My name is Ryan, as you know.
Nailed it.
That's how it goes. Been playing Magic for a long time, since about 1995. I've taken some serious breaks in there. I'm in the military and married with four kids, so I play as much as I can, but like all of you, I have a lot of time constraints, but I get a lot of Magic in.
Yeah, you'll fit in right there. Yeah, fight in right with the crowd.
I play more Magic than I should, probably.
Yeah, Ryan's a friend of Chris's. He's gone to, what open was it?
Richmond.
Yep. So about a year ago, yeah. Awesome guy, awesome player. So he's in town this weekend. We wanted to get him in on the cast. So, all right. So today we're going to start with talking about embracing the variance, just sort of how we deal with the variance, what we think it adds or takes away from the game. And then after the break, we just got another general segment on improving your game. We've got a bunch of different points here that we want to cover. We had a listener question, too, that we're going to address in the second half. So let's talk about variance. What kind of brought this segment on was during Modern States, I had an opponent who, he's a cool guy. I've played against him a few times. Nothing against him, but when I say, you know, we're shuffling up, I say good luck. He responds with, you know, I don't say good luck. I say have skill, because you should have skill to win. I was like, all right, you know, that's a fair point. Like, I agree. I'm not going to take away from that. But I think it kind of ignores that variance is a big percentage of this game. Like, what, 20%, 10%, 5%? Like, it exists no matter what. And you're going to lose some games to variance. But it also, you're going to win some games to variance. Like, it's something that I think makes the game more exciting at times. It makes us hate the game at times. Like, what are your guys' experiences with variance? What do you think it takes or adds from the game?
When it comes to variance for this game, it's difficult to prepare for all possibilities, which is one thing I like. You can never go into a tournament and think, you know, I mean, you want to think, there's no way I can lose. I've got this. I'm going to win. I have the best 75 out there. But there's just random stuff that you might run into. 8-rack, fairies, just a whole bunch of random things that it's not a cookie cutter tournament where each deck is going to be the same as what you saw in the last tournament. You don't know what rendition of Twin they're running, blue red, Grixis, American, what have you. Scape shifters, different variants of scape shift and things that now. I had the pleasure of losing to Jeff Hoogland last night to his new brew, which is on the Meadery. If you want to check out that website, and you can see it, it's the one he ran at GP Pit. But no, variance, I think it makes the game. It keeps it keeps you on your toes, and you're always changing things.
Yeah, it gives it that kind of like excitement of you can take something that's going to catch people off guard, or you can be the one that's caught off guard, and sometimes you're on either end of that. But like, it definitely makes the game much more exciting. It makes coverage much more exciting, like watching things. Chris, were you going to say something? I saw you lean in.
Well, I was just looking. One thing I've noticed when it comes to variants, when after Pod got banned, the big deck then was Twin. So, you know, I tooled my sideboard to beat Twin because I was playing Boggles at the time. Wasn't not a great matchup because they can just win. But now that Twin, the variants in Twin is kind of ironed out, now I look and go back at my original sideboard. And that's what I need to be playing because my post-board matchup against Twin's great. Most anything else where I can't just swing in and win, like, I don't have those tools there. So
yeah.
I took my variance so far to one way that now my post-board games against other very common decks, they're just not very good anymore. So now I need to kind of whirl it back around to just a good all-around, because that's what the game has gone to now, you know. It's not just super everyone's playing Twin. People are playing other stuff now. It's just Twin's still really good.
Yeah, I mean, especially in Modern, like, we saw Fairies do well at the last big tournament. And, like, Rob had a good point, too, where even 75 to 75, you can see up to 10 cards that are completely different. I know Hoogland's build that Rob mentioned, we had to look at some of the cards on there. No clue what some of those did. Commune with Lava has been popping up in Scapeshift lists now. Even though it's a new card, I wasn't familiar with that one either. But it gives it this, like, you don't want, like, sometimes Standard will be a rock, paper, scissors format where this deck almost always beats this deck, but then that deck almost beats the third deck. And it really just depends on what the matchup is. But it's nice in Modern where you have all these different decks where, yes, you have the variant side of it to where you may have no sideboard cards for a matchup. You may have never played this matchup, but it's much more, it keeps it much fresher than if it's just a situation where you know what you're going to play. I'm going to play this. I'm going to play that. Standard's going back to that a little bit now, too. I mean, we've seen more and more. Well, I guess, how many decks are you saying in Standard right now? Four or five?
It moves around quite a bit right now. Like, they were a little worried after the Pro Tour, like a lot of the articles and people were like, oh, Abzan again, because yeah. Abzan, you know, won the Pro Tour. It didn't perform better than other decks of the Pro Tour, but it did win, and that's what people see. But, I mean, Abzan Aggro is still a very solid, good deck. Their Green-White Megamorph, like, kicked off for a while. Tarka Red was doing some pretty good work. And then Jeskai Plaque was also a big breakout deck from the Pro Tour. People liked it a lot. Has a lot of play to it. But then the Rally deck started showing up, and then the Ramp deck started showing up. And there's a red-green landfall that's really good. So there's a bunch of, like, really solid decks, and they all kind of attack at slightly different angles. And there's a new Khan deck, apparently, out
there. Oh, really?
Well, the Khan deck, we were talking about, like, I played an FNM last
the
night.
The event deck,
I did really good, but I had, you know, I went 3-0-1, and my one was to the new Khan deck. So if you want to get into Standard and at an affordable price, that Khan deck is very competitive.
What is it? Like, what's the general theme of it?
It just does... Eldrazi spawn, and it's got the Nantuku husk in it for a little pop.
Oh, wow.
And it's got your the 1/1 that drain gain when something dies.
Blood artist guy.
Yeah, cutthroat. Yeah. So I mean, it's a little bit of a budgeted version of like basically Abzan Rally, but
nice, yeah.
It's got a lot of stay power. I definitely Radiant Flames him after board and wiped his entire board, and two turns later he had like five creatures back on the board. I was like, all right, well.
Yeah,
and then he beat me in that one game with a sideboard card. I don't even remember the name of it because it's so off the radar. But enchantment, remove X creatures. You get a creature, you know, for black and one. And you get a XX, which is double the number of creatures that you removed.
Wow. Huh.
So I killed everything, and then he just made 2/4/4s, and I tried a Crackling Doom. I'm hoping he would mess up. And he just made one in response and swung in for the win. I was like, well, yep.
Nice. That's
good card.
Crazy.
I probably cost you, what, 15 cents in a box?
Yeah,
like I said, I don't even know the name of it, so it wasn't.
What, and then does it have Hangerback Walkers in it? Is that the same one, or is that the
one?
Yeah,
that's probably
that?
The one that has Hangerback Walkers. It
makes sense with the husk.
I'm trying to remember whether. You know, it's all fuzzy. I was really drunk. No, I'm just kidding.
Smashed your FNM.
No, it was it's fall fuzzy. Like I said, I was always fiending for a cigarette the entire time. You know, Jeskai Plaque takes forever to play. I'm more of a...
Well, plus those, like, whenever you come across those random decks, you get caught in that spot where, like, you almost forget what's happening on the board. You're like, what am I playing against Larry now? Like, yeah, what is in his hand? What is...
I mean, we went to... I did have him in the last game, right? You know, just to, you know, not to puff my chest too much, I'm just saying. Mm-hmm. But that being
more
said...
More time there, I would have won.
Right? He got a draw because it took a while, and a lot of that was me reading his card. So I was like, what does this do again? What are you playing? What in the...
Yeah, yeah.
So it was reader time. It's a good 80% readers, and I was like, what's going on? This wasn't on an MTG Top 8, which, you know, it is a Khan deck, so it's already pre-made, but, you know, a lot of people like that it's not a mainstream deck, and it's very solid. I liked it. So
there's something to be said for flowing under the radar, like in Modern or Standard. Like, even if it's just an existing list, like that one sounds like it's pretty much based around the Rally deck, but it's different enough to where you're gonna hit cards that they play on you that you said off your radar. You had no idea that they were even an option, really. And I mean, like, that's, like I said, I think that a lot of people have issues with this in Magic. I know. Like, almost every bad beat story you ever hear from people is constantly like, oh, I had him dead to rights, but then he top decked that lucky card, or if I wouldn't have drawn all these lands, I would have won. But, like, that really is, like, if that's something that upsets you or that you can't handle, then Magic's really not the game for you, because there's not a way around that. Like, it's so ingrained in the deck that it's what makes deck construction interesting, right? Because if you had, like, Hearthstone, it's kind of a great antithesis to Magic, where that's what the game would be if, I mean, obviously there's no such thing as instance there, but that's what it would be if lands were not a thing, if perfect mana always existed, that's how it would play out. And like, I don't know if any of you have messed around with Hearthstone or not, but like, it's boring. Like, that was my biggest complaint. The complexities aren't there, and I mean, that's a whole other issue, but just the one crystal added every turn, like, it changes the way decks are constructed with the way they're put together. Obviously there's no lands there, so you don't have that whole issue, but like, that's a big part of the fun for Magic, is trying to look at, like, can I be greedy with this mana base? Can I jam in this third or fourth color, like in Modern and Standard right now? Or will I pay too much for it? Like, how many times will I pay for it? Does it make it worth it? I mean, like, I think that's a huge part of the game. I mean, I know you guys all have bad beat stories for variants, right? Like,
right.
Who doesn't? That's, like I said, that's all you ever hear. But I mean, do you guys feel the same way? Do you enjoy that variance? Does it?
Yeah, I always look at it. It's in the game of Magic, it's good to be good, but sometimes it pays better to be lucky. So, and that's that variance. I mean, you can have answer cards if you never draw them, or they draw answers to your answers. Right. Like that's just the luck of the cards. It's gonna happen.
Main thing I like about the variance is it keeps each tournament in every man's tournament.
Yeah.
It's not always going to be the same consecutive people top 16. And yeah, sure, there's going to be a lot of them up there. And that's because they have the skill, the knowledge, and the know-how of all the other decks they're going against. But that it's that variance that changes it up every weekend. And I really enjoy that.
Yeah, I think you see a good mix because there certainly are, like, that's what keeps it away from gambling and pure luck is you do see pro names and even like local players that consistently do well. I mean, Alex is a great example. He top eights almost everything he goes to, it seems like.
Mike usually puts on a good performance.
Yeah, Mike's the same way, yeah. So, I mean, yeah, Ryan right here with us. Yeah, Ryan. Very similar. Always at the top tables.
I do okay.
but
I saw
your
Star City profile. I know how good you are.
But yeah, so more. That's what, like, that portion of it, there it is very skill involved. Like, knowing the format, knowing your deck, knowing how interactions work out and how the matches play out, that is huge, and I don't want to downplay that at all. I don't think any of us would play it if that weren't the case. But there is, you know, there is that percentage. What is LSV's thing? He always says it stands for luck, skill equals victory, I think is what it is. So even when you have top players acknowledging, like, yes, obviously, luck is, it's a significant portion. Like, and like Rob was saying, you have some top eights where it's one pro and seven names you've never seen before. You have some where it's 4 and 4, some as high as 6 pros showing up. So, you know, it just depends on the day and how things play out. But yeah, just looking at some of the other points here that we had, like, I think it definitely makes spectating the game much more fun. Like, knowing, I mean, there's that classic example of the bonfire ripped off the top for the wind. It had to be the bonfire, couldn't be anything else. And there's all kinds of examples like that. I mean, you were just talking about last night, Ryan, at FNM, where you ripped a crackling doom off the top.
For the win.
Yeah. So, like, it gives it that moment
Dragon
of.
Dragon Lord Jamoka is good, so.
Seriously. Because it was what? Dragon Lord Jamoka?
Yeah, he played Dragon Lord Jamoka, and he said, "You have the answer. I'm sure you have the answer." I was like, "Well, it's in the deck.
It exists. Yeah, it's
on the top of the deck, actually. Yeah. Turns out. Lucky for me.
Yeah, I like getting the sense of, you know, we have what we call net decking. You know, you go in there, you find, we'll say 50 of the 60 cards, or even 55 that you like, and it's that variance comes in where you pick that one or two cards you think that's going to hit the meta for that event. And when you're spectating and you see someone pull that one card that no one ever thought of, and you're like, wow, that just houses that dude right now. That's what you enjoy seeing. Like, that guy was thinking whenever he put that card in his deck. And you can tell when he plays that card against the other dude, the other guy did not think that dude would have that card or even knew that card existed in his deck. And it just makes you smile, like, man, I'm glad I'm not him.
Well, it's like the Dragon Lord Outcast. Is that the right name of that card? The one red?
Dragon Master Outcast.
Dragon Master Outcast. I knew I was going to mess that up. So, like, seeing that on camera when no one was really playing it in list yet. What deck was that? That was Ojutai, Jeskai Black, I guess, right?
Black.
Yep. Yeah, because I know he Ojutai'd it back in. So, yeah. So, I mean, even stuff like that you see on camera, you're like, okay, nice. I forgot this card was reprinted in this set. Like, totally forgot it was standard legal. Now this guy's got it played on camera, and you're sitting like, all right, is it going to actually live for next turn? This is why the card's bad. Usually it dies, doesn't make anything. Nope, can't kill it. Doesn't have the answer.
Dark Jeskai.
Yeah, here comes the token. Here comes the token. So, like, it just, yeah, it makes the matches that much more interesting. And, like, I mean, everyone has pet cards, too. So, like, you know we're going to play against people at local tournament. Like, I know they're going to have this goofy card. Like, even me in Modern, I prefer Anticipate over Serum Visions. I just like instant speed. Like, I go back and forth. Sometimes I admit that I'm wrong and put Serum Visions back in. Or I'll do a 2-2 split to try to, like, concede a little there. But it's like, that's just the way I like to see decks constructed. Like, I like to see instant speed interactions. So you're always going to have, you know, those top eight lists, but then you're also always going to have, what, hundreds of little variants of it where they've changed 2 or 3 cards. But yeah, I mean, like, I hit on this point earlier, but I mean, if you don't like variants, like, that's just not, it's not the game for you. You guys have any other thoughts on this before we get out of this segment?
I want to go back and touch on a couple things. Like,
yeah, go for it.
We've so
got plenty of time here.
So, when I think variants, I think more of, like, you know, the pain variants where you draw 7 land and they draw, like, the nuts, or you draw all creatures and no land. You don't draw land and you have, like, 2 land. So, that's, like, the extreme, and that's not particularly fun, but it's the darkest side of variants. Right. That's what the we all worst. Cry about. But there's like there's some interesting stuff that's happened in the course of gaming period. I don't know if anybody's familiar with this game. There's a game called Warhammer, the card game, Warhammer. World of Warcraft, the card game.
Oh, okay.
Right, so that game was very well funded. There was massive tournaments, big money. People were showing up and playing. Hall of Famer Brian Kibler, I believe, worked on that.
Oh, yeah,
and
nice.
I was talking to a bunch of people about it, and that game eventually failed, and it's gone now. There's $30, $40 cards, big tournaments, $100,000 payouts. Wow. For, you know, big time stuff, everything we us as Magic players want to get into and see. But it died. So basically, they eliminated the variants of land draws, where you can just make any card land, something to that effect. I didn't really play it very much. And what happened is, because you can eliminate variants, as far as like, you know, having to work through maybe land issues or stuff like that.
Yeah.
The best players always won. There were very specifically always, there's always a best deck or a second best deck that could beat the best deck. So you play that cat and mouse game. Yeah. But there wasn't a lot of variance in decks. There wasn't a lot of deck selection, that kind of stuff. And newer players, like you, I think it's on there somewhere, you know, being able to beat someone who's better than you.
Yeah, you know, that's a good draw, yeah.
And, you know, if you play a lot of Magic, like I said, I've been playing a long time, it's not that bad. It's horrible. No. I don't like to lose, you know, random games, but it is a lot of variance. Like you said, 10, 5%. It's probably even more. Like, the best players in the world are clearly better than everyone else. Even at the highest level, they're better. And that being said, their win rate on the Pro Tour is like 65%, is outstanding.
Yeah, that's ridiculous. Great. Yeah.
So that's like a 35%. That basically means it's a 35% variance. Yeah. You're just not going to win 35% of the time, which is good. They still rise to the top, like you were talking. The best players typically perform. But
yeah, you need to see that, because you definitely want to be rewarded for skill. But that's interesting about the Worldcraft example. Like, I've seen cards of it lingering around, and people have like deck boxes, but I never really knew much about it. But yeah. But that really is, like, variance in deck is another great point in that, when things get hammered out to that level, it's just skill-based, that's it. I mean, when I think of purely skill-based, I think of chess, which chess is a great game, but we already have chess. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, when you want to play chess, you just play chess.
Yeah.
So it's nice to have something that increases the level of luck a little bit. I mean, like, we see it in almost every popular spectator sport has it, like baseball, football. I mean, any athletic event, there's some level of who's out on injury that week, who's in, who's out. And then sometimes you even see the teams where statistically, I mean, man, just on Thanksgiving, like I thought the Eagles were going to destroy the Lions. And then Matthew Stafford puts up, what, 5, 6 passing touchdowns.
It's good.
And it's like, what happened? What was that? Was that luck? Was that variance? Like, I don't know what to call that, but everyone loves to see things get shooken up a little bit, because it gets boring watching, you know, the best deck and the deck that beats the best deck. That's a boring format.
That's why Modern is so great right now. There's 5 million decks.
You never know what you're going to play. That's like, man, Modern I love, because you sit down across from something, they play a land. You're like, okay, it's a Scalding Tarn. That narrows it down to, what, 5 decks? 6 decks still at that point?
At least.
Yeah, they fetch a Steam Vent. Okay, no more ground made. Still not sure. They tap it, play Delver. Okay, there we go. We're on Delver. Gotcha. Like,
or an Electromancer, or a, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, an Electromancer. Okay,
or they
get
a White Source and play Wall of Omens.
Yeah. Jeskai Control. And then Rob found out last night, oh, I'm playing Jeskai Control. Wait, no, Scape Shift. Gotcha.
Yep, ended up being Scape Shift.
Yeah, so, I mean, that's like, once you know your matchups, once you know how things are supposed to be played out, that's the funnest part there. Is like, how do I get from where I am to a place that I have experience in? And that's matching the deck, finding out what matchup I'm in. And sometimes there's a disconnect. You just don't find it. You're like, I've never played this deck.
Well, one of the deeper layers of Magic, too, like you were talking about your mana base, like figuring out. I think I don't know if I was talking to Chris or not, but you were saying something about, you work on this deck and you're still working on the mana base. You weren't sure about it. Maybe you cheated. That's, you know, that's playing with the variance in Magic. Yeah. Try to minimize the variance, like playing a more explosive deck or playing a more consistent deck. Working on your mana base, like shaving from 4 to 3. Like, that's all a huge part of Magic that makes it fun, is trying to minimize these bad draws or good draws as much as possible. And then you know, statistically speaking, you win a lot more games the better you get at. And it's, you know, at first you play, you know, everyone just wants to win. Winning's great. I'm a real big fan of winning. I don't want to, you know,
pretend
that I'm, downplay, you know, that I'm all, not a Commander-esque player. I don't show up to hang out. I do that too, but I like blood. I'm out for blood. It's much more fun. But you know, there's so many things that are just different levels of fun, you know, and I enjoy really good sportsmanship. So that whole have skill is really, I mean, obviously good luck is just, you know, best of witches, enjoy yourself,
yeah.
You know.
It's just, you say it just to, you know, we're being nice here. Yeah, let's have a good game, not a seven lander.
Yeah, no seven landers. Hopefully you have a competitive game and it's fun for both of us.
I didn't even
say
that.
And then I win. In the end, I win, of course. That's what I'm really hoping for.
But, that was the best part of that story, too, that I told you guys before, but I didn't say it on here, is, yeah, I proceeded to mulligan to, like, 4 or 5 after he said that. I'm like, skill can't help me here. Like,
you got to watch on camera, though. There's a couple open series I watched recently where I think 2 or 3 different times in one tournament, one of the guys that is top runner in points, he won some four down to 4 with with the Soul Tide Control. It was like, and talk about good coverage. You're like, oh my god!
See, exactly, yeah. That's we're counting him out. He's done.
He's a god.
Well,
that's amazing.
This 4 is not bad.
It was so sweet. It was really sweet to watch. But I mean, that's really hard to do.
I mean, I think some of the best times when I've walked away from the table and thought like, man, that was a good call, Bobby, or that was a good line to play, were times when I didn't have quite the right mana, or I had to make that weird decision of like, I can get a steam vent here, but I'm locking myself out of this card. Is that the right call? And you kind of think about it, like, well, these cards are more important than this matchup, so I'm going to go for it. And like that comes down to variance too, because it depends on what my opponent plays. So you play the numbers in a way to where you're like, okay, you know, 40% roughly of the time he's going to have this, but he's more likely to have this, so I'm going to go the line that puts him on having the less likely card, and then you get blown out for it, or you get rewarded for it. Yeah. Chris should be huge on variance. What was that horrible 7 that you kept? Green source and a mostly green deck.
I had like 2 or 3 cards, double white. Only had green land.
That was it.
Green land in hand, and I said, keep. Alex was looking. It was like
YOLO, baby.
All of us.
It was an IQ. Alex, right there at the table, was like, you're dumb.
Everyone walked away. Like, oh, Chris just lost this round.
Yeah, we just gave up on him. Then we come back, and he's like, hey, guys, I won. What? Yeah.
Like, because I'm a big.
YOLO, baby. YOLO.
I'm a big advocate. Sometimes you just got to trust the deck. You built it. Built it to perform.
It will come.
You know it's going to work for
you.
You
build it, man, they will come. Cornfield, every time.
And my opponent, he got stuck. He was playing Abzan, and he got stuck on one land, and I commenced to rip white lands off the top. And
great. Got a good horrible keep story.
So it was a moron versus a moron. Got it.
It was anyone's game at that point.
I got a good horrible keep. You know, the Open I top 8 in Legacy. I think top 8 is standard, right?
Yeah.
I top 8 in Legacy.
Solid weekend.
Yeah, definitely. I absolutely game 3 kept a no lander and won. It was sweet.
Nice. Well, you said Legacy, though?
Yeah.
Okay, you get off a little bit more on that.
I mean, you know,
still just as risky.
You were running Legacy Infect, though, right?
I'm Infect, and he's playing, what is it? The red shenanigans deck where he plays Blood Moon on turn 1 or. I forget what it's called, but Awkward Silence.
Just carry on with the story.
Basically, they ditch a bunch of cards and play some horrible hate spell that you can't deal with. I can't remember. It was like a Goblin Welder type, whatever.
It's not Charles Belcher, is it?
No, they mill you out. They like make all your deck one color and mill you out, but they also jump out.
The Painter Servant kind of.
Servant type. They do that and make all your spells cost three. Yeah. Kind of grab on turn 1. But I had double Force of Will and 2 Gitaxian Pros, and I was like, game time, man, I got this. And
I got some card draw,
like,
some free
ditch 4 cards and play a Blood Moon. I win. I was like, Force of Will. All right. Game time, baby.
We're in this thing.
Pro land. Elf win. It was great. It's pretty fun.
Yep. See, like I said, those are the best stories. No one cares about the story where you're like, yeah, he played the card he should play, then I played the card I should play, and that beat it, and then that was the game. You're like, whatever. Like, nah, you want those exciting. There's those games too where you make decisions based on, like, I mean, it's funny because it affects playstyle so much. What Chris did with his 7, I would never do. I'm the super mulliganer. I'm gonna go down to 4 to guarantee get some play.
You're a straight numbers guy.
I'm like,
probability,
all right,
from the get-go. And I'm sorry, sometimes I'm like, you know, if I'm gonna win because it's a bad matchup, it's gonna.
We're
I'm
going
gonna win because I rip the right.
That's
stuff.
A funny number to figure out. It's like sometimes your percentages are so low either way. You gotta hope.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
And the less traveled path sometimes gets them. You're like,
if it's keeping a 7 and having a rip 3 land in a row, it's very unlikely, but I have a much better chance of winning if that happens.
If I do it,
Then if I go to 4 where I just get ground to dirt,
absolutely.
Because, no,
I mean, you got to figure Abzan right then. It was very important to have all 3 colors to play. They didn't have a lot of early game interaction.
I do want to point out, this is fairly newer players. Mulliganing is usually the best answer, by the way. Most people do not mulligan enough, just for the record. And furthermore, there's a rule in place, which was very debated, and a lot of people were like, I was talking about removing variance kills a game. It was not too extreme, but I was worried about it because you don't want to remove too much variance. You just really don't. Yeah. So, but it seems to be a pretty good rule, and it made it not as painful.
They nailed it. Back, yeah, so. They did a great job.
That mulliganing thing, though, 100%. Because when I first started getting really competitive, I was afraid of mulliganing, and now it's you have to, because that's going to help you win.
Yeah, I forget. I was reading an article, Kibler, or some Hall of Famer, some player significantly better than me. He pointed out you don't have to mulligan ever, but you do get to mulligan.
Yep.
Yeah.
So it's not like a penalty. It's a because anyone else been playing for decades like me? Here?
Not quite a decade. I mean, Rob and I played forever ago, but we
played back in like Judgment and Torment.
Yeah, like Revised, when all these dual lands were standard, there was not the same mulligan rule. You definitely either had all land or no land. That's the only way you got to mulligan. And there's no play draw rule, so whoever won the die roll was significantly advantaged. So those were brutal days, I will tell you right now. Black Vice, turn one, go.
Like, you probably had to play by Lantern Light, too.
Legacy, yeah. Black Vice is back, baby.
But there's a much bigger card pool. You couldn't dump your hand like you can. So.
But I mean, it's like
Mountain Goat for the win. That's pretty fun, though. You got to play some really interesting combinations of cards, because that's all there was. But anyway.
The good old days.
That mulligan rule, though, was pretty brutal. You lose a lot more.
Yeah, well, and that's what's awesome. You get the Wizard, trust me. They've done a great job of finding that right level. Because, the new mulligan rule, it's not busted. It doesn't really help combo that much. I mean, it smooths out, but it's tolerable,
good.
Yeah. And, I mean, because you don't want, this heavy variance to turn a game either. Then you're just roll and die at that point. So, I like that they're trying to keep it at that mark. They're sort of acknowledging that mark. And, But, all right, we are at time here for this segment, so we'll take a quick break and we'll be back to talk about improving your game. All right, welcome back, everybody. So before we really get too much into this segment, we had a question that came in through the email that was about, so whenever you have, the specific example was a Wrath of God casted with Catacomb Sifter on the board and multiple other creatures. So Catacomb Sifter has the triggered ability, when this creature or another creature dies, scry one. So the weird thing here is it's sort of a rules issue where you get a scry for every creature you have on board. So when Wrath of God is cast, all of your board is wiped. Say you have five creatures, including the Sifter, die, and you get a scry for each one. Now, it's always
not the Sifter, though, just for the record.
Not the Sifter?
No, okay. he other creatures.
It's just other creatures for his? So, yeah. Okay, cool. So normally, it's kind of a weird counterintuitive example, because you would assume that if you're getting the scry triggers, that means the Sifter is still alive, but that something else has died. So you think of it like this creature dies, then this creature dies. But that's not what's going on. Everything's dying simultaneously. So we found the specific rule for it in the... what are the names for these rules? The comprehensive rules. It's 603.6D. And it's a special treatment for events that happen simultaneously. So the key part here, it's a pretty big paragraph. I'm not going to read the whole thing, but the key thing is... leaves the battlefield abilities. So they get a special treatment where the game looks back at to what was on the board when the event happens. So you still get a trigger for all of those, even though all the creatures leave simultaneously. The example here is almost exactly like it, where it's whenever a creature dies, you gain one life. So if a spell destroys all artifacts, creatures, and enchantments, the artifact's ability triggers, even though the artifact goes at the same time as the creatures. There's unfortunately not much more of an explanation. It's more so just because that's the effect they wanted in the game rather than something that fit into the rules that already existed. So it's sort of the same with Scapeshift, when all the mountains enter at the same time as Valakut. Whenever things leave or enter simultaneously, they see themselves and all other things leaving at the same time or entering at the same time.
Yeah, I think the big thing out of the whole big paragraph, it just says the game has to, and it's in quotations, look back in time to determine if these abilities trigger. That's the big portion, I'd say, to look. Because all this stuff, it's just a lot of explaining on ability triggers. It just has to look back in time. And
The way you always hear it describes, it sees them go to the graveyard. It sees.
Yeah.
As it's going to the graveyard, it sees. So...
Yep. So
you're not in the graveyard until you're actually dead, and you get to see stuff till you die, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Like, and I mean, it's funny because it's always one that I thought was counterintuitive, and even the rules, it mentions that these are treated specifically this way. It's sort of a special exemption. So that kind of explains why it doesn't fit in with the typical magic logic. But that was the rule number there, and we can post that rule number up with the show, so that way if you want to check that out. But there's not much more of an explanation other than they leave and they see each other.
Another good, by the way, for Robert, is listener question, is Robert the listener?
Yeah, Robert was the,
yeah. So Robert, when anything weird comes up or you have any questions, judge! Telling you, that's as a new player, you're not being a jerk, you're not being weird or difficult. Always call a judge. They'll tell you right out. That's what they do. That's why they get free boxes of Magic cards.
Yeah, and on the Magic subreddit too, they actually have a nice tool where you can go on there and they have a live judge chat too if you ever want specific examples. Because I think a lot of Magic players have this. And like, I was actually kind of glad to get this question because there's lots of things where I understand what's going to happen, but I don't know the specific rule. I don't know exactly why. I just know that that's the way that the interaction plays out. So, yeah. So, I mean, the live judge chat on the Magic subreddit is a pretty good tool for that, too. There's usually always someone on it that can answer questions like this, too, if you need it a little quicker. But, all right. So, let's get into this segment. We just wanted to talk about ways to improve your game. One of the big ones that we wanted to start with is what Rob's been doing lately, and that's using MTGO. How have you been doing with MTGO, Rob?
Now that I've been playing more of the kind of like the pay-to-play games, the ones where you pay tickets for and that, I've been seeing a lot more of the decks that I want to be playing against. The Grixis Delvers, the Boggles even. I've been going against Infect, Zoo, all of that, the common modern decks, because I'm getting ready for the Cincinnati Open. I'm going to be flying out there, and I'm meeting up with a couple friends. But right now, I don't have time to play. I have the mornings, and then I have late at night.
Right.
And last night, actually, I just started in the Modern League. My first match was Grixis Delver, which was great. I ended up beating him 2-1. And then my follow-on matchup, like I said earlier in the first segment, ended up being Jeff Hoogland.
Yeah.
So there's
some quality testing going on.
And it's great, too. And it's a really good way to improve. Last week, or a couple days ago when I was playing, I realized that I was missing something in my sideboard, something very key for an Infect player, and that's an answer to Malira.
Ooh, yeah.
I had none. And two games back-to-back, I ended up seeing Malira, Bloom Titan, and then a mono green deck. Both had them in the side, pulled them out, and I ended up changing up my sideboard a little bit. Now I have two dismembers, which I didn't have before because it wasn't an issue. I hadn't seen it.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, and that's, you mentioned going into the games where you had to actually pay tickets to play, and I mean, I think that's key for any Magic tournament. Like, the lower the entry, especially if the entry's free, it's going to affect the meta there. It's going to affect the crowd. I mean, I hate to say it, but you really do kind of have to pay to play for these events to get against high-quality opponents who have taken the time to really perfect their decks and really build like a solid tier one list, because if you're paying money to play an event, you're not going to do that with just something you threw together or something you built yesterday, you know, one of the budget friendly decks, things like that. So that really does get you into that quality level of testing. And I mean, yeah, to be able to get that at any hour of the day is pretty awesome. You haven't had any issues finding opponents in the middle of the night?
No. Last night during the league, it took me, I think, 2 minutes to find my round two opponent. But a good thing too is whenever you win, you get player points then. And you can use those player points to pay for these matches, these nice. Other games. So if you lose, you get 5. And if you win, I think you get like 35 or 50. I can't remember the exact payout.
Yeah, the player point system is kind of messy.
Then you can use that also to get into 8-man single elimination tournaments where you can win packs and things like that. And you can use that to trade off with other players for other cards.
Nice.
So, no, I enjoy it. It is pricey because, again, you're buying your deck again, which is kind of saddening to do.
Yeah, especially in a digital version.
Yeah.
It's much more affordable, though.
Yeah, that's true. It is. Infect was only, I think, $150, vice what it is right now.
Yeah, $500 or $700.
It's a lot more if you buy the actual cards for those of you who haven't tried yet.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah, you will find some weird cards, though, that if the sets are less common online than they are in paper. So
not draft as much. Or,
yeah, exactly. Random cards that are $70 that are like 10 or 20 in paper. But for the overall, though, you look at deck prices, they're, you know, a fraction of what the paper equivalent costs. So it's not a whole another full investment. And I mean, like, I made a note here, too, to mention, like, a lot of people are fans of Cockatrice and X-Mage. Those are both, like, gray area products because they're not Wizards products. They're sort of things people have made where you can play online. You have bootleg versions of MTGO. And you run into the problem with those where, like, you really need to establish specific people you're going to test against. Because on both of those programs, you'll run into the craziest, like...
Can't you cheat, too?
Jank decks.
Is there, like, a cheat bugs on it and stuff like that?
Yeah, like, Cockatrice is... The rules aren't built into the program, so you can pretty much do whatever you want. Yeah, it's not really a rules, like, enforced program. You have to enforce them yourself. So that's why, yeah, you really want to find quality opponents to test against. People you know in real life and things like that. But those are options. I mean, it's a little bit more budget friendly because MTGO, like, you can play the free lobby, but like Rob was talking about last week, like, who knows what you're going to play against in the free lobby? It's all over the board. But yeah, so going down these here, I mean, I want to skip ahead for now real quick to make sure we touch on it, and that's teaching those around you. I know, Ryan, you've got a lot of experience with that lately. Yeah, well, how's that been going?
It's been going pretty good. Someone I had taught a while ago is sitting in here today. I got him back in the game, and I really try to teach him a lot. And, you know, he didn't listen very good, but that's all right.
Yeah, Chris, he's not like, talking about
what?
No, but I think what you're referring to, I mentioned it to you guys. I have my 8-year-old son has been playing a lot lately. And I even got my wife to start playing now. And she went to the last pre-release.
Nice.
And I think she went 2-2 in her very first event ever pre-release. That's what's up. Built a pretty solid deck, also, so it's pretty cool. And she gets into it a little more and organizes her cards. And it's another really fun aspect of getting your family into it is I often, hey Jake, can I borrow that Gideon you pulled, or Tina? Nice. I need 2 dig through times, a couple fetches, and they're like, yeah, here you go. And
that's awesome.
Sweet,
bigger card pool.
Yeah, it's nice, bigger card pool. You know, granted, I put like 98% of the resources into it, and they borrow a lot more cards from me. But it's still kind of it's nice and cool, you know. So.
How has it helped you, though, as a player?
I don't know. Like, as far as me sitting down and, you know, crushing the world, I really don't I don't know that it helps that too much. But, you know, Magic is a pretty rich and rewarding thing in a lot of different ways. Like, so teaching someone else and taking the time, like, there's some players where I'm at that are really competitive, and then they get a bad name in some of the groups because all they care about, they come and they just cheat us and trick us and like play all the little timing tricks, like some of the past episodes you talk about, like priority and timing, and there's like little dirtbag tricks you can
move to clean up. I think we talked about that one.
I'm gonna go ahead and leave my main phase, and they go, oh, okay, and then you're like, too late, can't tap that, you know, whatever, you know, whatever. And I talked to a lot of the guys, and there's a really good friend of mine now. I just really try to harp on him about like sportsmanship in the game, and like the guy from Brazil just made a Hall of Fame. I can't remember his name now.
Was it PVD?
No, Paulo's been on for a while. There's another one that just made the Hall of Fame, and he doesn't have all the results that everyone have, but he's basically the foundation of Brazilian. Like, PV was talking. I gotta look his name up to get that out there, but just made the Hall of Fame, and as one of the guys I would have voted for, just because his contributions to Magic are so immense. Like, there wouldn't be Brazilian Magic without him. And that's like crazy. He pulls the guys in, he plays tests with them. He has options to play on major teams like the Pantheon and Channel Fireball teams, and he refuses. He's like, well, if I do that, then I can't help these guys.
Wow,
my nice. Brazil, yeah. So it's really cool. Like, and also helping, like, so, and pulling back to our topic, like helping people to learn how to play and stuff. You know, that's a huge part of Magic. Like, you know, the more people that play, the more successful this game is going to be. They're going to grow into good players. Like my 8-year-old, I give him another 5 or 6 years, and I probably won't be able to beat him anymore. He's pretty.
Yeah, I said
he's gnarly right now.
The last time
you
were down, he was playing an FNM, and I was just, dude, I was blown away. Like, yeah, I took him to pretty good. Like,
I took him to the Atlanta Open, and neither one of us had a great tournament, but he definitely drafted like a riot afterwards. And he's drafting now, like decks that take years for people to get that, like. He sees everything I do, and he mirrors it, and he takes several games off of people. People were coming up to me afterwards and was like, is this your son? Like, it's, you know, as a father, like, it's just so rewarding. Like, I just feel this. I try not to, like, gush all over
swallow
people.
Too much,
But, like, afterwards, I go tell Tina, it's just really rewarding.
Yeah, no,
to,
awesome.
You know, it's really, really neat. They're like, oh, man, he's amazing. And, you know, and it's also fun to watch, like, the guys are like, free game.
Free win.
And he just ranches him and like just like he's just a robot. He's like tap tap boom, he's twirling his hair before and it's his turn. And he just takes off with his turn. It's really fun to watch.
He's doing math homework there. 4 + 5 yeah. is 9.
Yeah, they and get all free
swing
win
for 12.
And they start. They just they fall into the tank and they're just like tanking. Like oh my god, I'm gonna lose an 8-year-old. They're looking over at their friends like what do I do? And it's pretty fun to watch.
Yeah, well, but, it is a coin flip because I know we've been played up. There's some younger girls that play over across the water and they're awesome. Like they're both kind of the same way. But I know we've all been played against like people bring their kids and they haven't really taught them at all. They kind of know what's going on. So it is a coin toss. But yeah, no, I sat next to him at F&M that last time and it was a blast to watch. Like, yeah. Man,
he was funny. I liked it one time. He's like, see this guy? He's going to kill you.
Yeah, it's a bruiser.
Yeah, we're working through all that too. He has a really hard time losing still.
Well, you know, at that age.
But he's getting a lot better with that. And, you know, some of that, you know, one of the things, like going back to sportsmanship, I really get on him if he loses. He needs to shake hands with the opponent and say a good game. Because, you know, like back to variance, back to everything we've been talking about, like one thing that I'm real big on, and I try to be as cool as possible when I sit down, as friendly. And then I get 7 land or mulligan to 4, and I'm like, hey, good game. Because I know it sucks for me, but. You know, I don't want to make someone's victory, you know, I don't want to make them feel
like
bad about
cheapen
winning.
It. Yeah, yeah.
I don't want to make you, like, when I win, I don't feel bad because I have no soul. But I also don't want to make other people feel bad. Like, if you lose, you know, don't be that guy. Like, no one likes that guy. Like, oh, is that right? And you just, you're like, all right, bro, I'm going to go because this is awkward.
No, I've been across the table from that a few times. And, like, I've said a few times on the cast, like, that's sort of how I like to play is, before I draw my opening 7, I'm friendly, awesome, having a good time, making some jokes. As soon as I draw this card, stone face. Like, we're in it, and as soon as we're done, back to normal. Yeah. Like, try to separate your ego and yourself from what happens like in that game. Because, I mean, variance. We're just talking about that. Who knows what's going
to
happen?
Oh, it'll all get better for everyone. But not to pull us too far off topic, but all in all, it's been great.
I taught – my girlfriend was playing for a little while, and, I mean – she's kind of faded out. She's not the competitive type. So without that bug, it's real hard to keep. Like, as we started to go bigger and bigger events, she kind of dropped out. But even just, like, walking through the rules and why you do things and kind of explaining. Like, it's kind of the same thing as doing this podcast where sometimes we explain why we do something. Like, I haven't thought about it that way in a long time. Like, it's just a habit now at this point. So it's kind of cool to go back through and just think about, like, why do I wait till my second main phase to play some of these things? Why do I do these habits? And, it's kind of cool to back up on them a little bit and try to explain to someone else, like, why it's so important and what you're getting out of it.
That's a good point.
But, going down the list here, too, we've got, you know, we've mentioned it before a few times, but testing against a gauntlet, like, there's nothing that substitute repetition, right? Like, that's the way you learn these matchups. That's the way you play these matchups. That's the way things start to click. So I don't want to get too much into the basics of the gauntlet because we've done that so many times. But what are you guys doing when you're playing? Like, what do you get out of gauntlet matches that you don't get out of at tournaments?
My biggest thing is playing the other decks because we each pilot, you know, the same deck. We play what we have, and then whenever it swaps up, so it's your turn to play Scapeshift, now I'm going to run, like, Affinity or Merfolk or Grixis. And I would normally never play those decks, but now I get to see it, and I get to think through. So then it kind of puts me in my opponent's shoes when I'm playing them.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, these are the cards that I'm hoping for. What mana does he have? Oh, he doesn't even support it. I'm fine. I can go in.
Yeah.
The big thing I think we get is because when we run gauntlets here, other people are still white. Like, we might be playing other games over the time, but there's usually at least one person kind of floating. They get to watch. And that person gets a view of both sides, and they can say, look, this is just a really bad matchup for you. Yeah. And so you can go into that match going, this isn't a great matchup for me, but in the times I won, this is what I need.
Yeah, develop a game plan.
Because, I mean, with the variants, there's just some matches that are bad for you, and if you've played that matchup enough, like in the gauntlets that we've done, you can go, all right, 60% of the time of the times that I did win, I needed these cards to win. I just either had to put a faster clock on them, or I had to have those key counters at the key spot, and still I only had a 60% chance to win, you know, some of that time, or even 40%.
Yeah.
So it gives you that look, or when you're done, you know, sitting there like, all right, well, you played your cards. Is there a card you thought I could have had that would have just stomped you out? Like, yes, this would have worked if you'd have had this in hand. So you can start compiling all that data and going, building that game plan like Ryan was talking that. If I don't have any of these cards, I just lose. Like, I might as well just play lands for, you know, eight turns.
Cause that affects your mulligans, too. Then you know, okay, I need to be a little more aggressive with these mulligans. Like, I have to hit this card. Yeah, I mean, that's, I think you kind of hit on it with the person floating around, but that's probably the best part is, like, we have no time limits. So we finish the match, and we have all the time in the world to sit down and go, okay, why did you make this line of play? Why did you choose to do this? Because a lot of times when someone else questions that, you'll realize, like, oh, I did it because I was playing around this thing. You're like, well, I run one copy of that card. So you really don't need to be hindering your own game plan to play against such a weird fringe case. And, I mean, just being able to kind of, like, talk out, like, why the board developed the way it did, why the match went that way, and just try to figure out, like you said, I mean, sometimes you just have to concede, like, this is a bad matchup. Like, it's always going to be a bad matchup. This is the one line that I can take to try to alleviate it some, but, like, it is what it is. And just being comfortable with knowing, like, well, all my other matchups are so good that I'm okay with that. Like, I'll give up that one. But, yeah, I mean, that's – and, you know, I made a separate note here, too, to make sure that when you're doing these, like, make sure to play sideboarded games. Because, I mean, if you think about it, in any given round, you're going to play one game of main board, one game of sideboard. So at least 50% of your games are sideboarded. That's assuming you never go probably to game more. Three. Exactly. Definitely so once you fact same. In the game yeah. three, you've got more sideboard games now. So you're always going to play more sideboard games than main board games.
Right.
So like you need to know your main board matchups, but it's so critical to make sure you're sideboarding right. Like, I can't count how many times at a tournament someone will kind of chit-chat afterwards, like, all right, here's what I took out, here's what I brought in. I'm like, well, you had, like, a Spell Sky in your main sideboard. That's way better against Scapeshift than these random things you brought in.
Might affect your deck selection, too. I know that, like, if you just play game ones, like, there'd probably be a lot more affinity players out there. We just ran across that. We were getting a guy ready for regionals, and we went over, we were money drafting, messing around, doing whatever. And Graham had played all the fun game ones of Affinity versus the, I think he was playing. He was playing white, black, green, or what, something, whatever. Abzan, some Abzan list. And then I got to play all the sideboarding games, and it was so miserable. I'll never, like, just rest in peace out of all the time. All the horrible, or not rest in peace, but Stony Silences. I was just, oh man, this is so miserable. Like, why?
That's a
would,
great point.
But Graham just ranched him on all the game ones. He's like, oh, this is so much fun, you know?
And yeah, I deck's
just,
great.
I just need to go be miserable and just, like, get, you know, Stony Silenced out of the ballpark and just, like, oh my, every time? It's like,
yeah, oh, that's a huge point. Yeah, you need to know how these sideboard games are going to play. Like, yeah, that's anyone considering Affinity. Like,
yeah, your sideboarding games are rough. Like, you know, I'm used to that, though. I'm a red aggro player, so.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, we get sideboarded out of the park, like, sometimes, but that's fine. Find a way, you overcome, it's no problem.
Yeah, but, I mean, like you said, that's a key, though. You need to make sure that that's how you feel about it. Because if you're going to get salty every time someone plays a good sideboard card against you, don't play Affinity. Yeah, like,
do not,
it's going to be a long day.
It's on the radar. Trust me.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and I mean, I know, Chris, you dealt with that, too, with Burn. I mean, Modern Burn.
Like, oh, yeah.
I mean, Dragon's Claws Leyline. And Course Firewalkers. Yeah, Ley Lines. Ugh.
I mean, it caused me to try and change up what version of Burn I'm playing. I don't necessarily, like, I'm a real advocate of the Jund Burn. I just, there's so many hate cards out there for Burn that you're just like, well, if I'm going to play this, I might as well play the fastest version.
Yeah.
I make them have it.
Go under it before they get there.
Yeah, I mean, we've talked about that a few times where, like, you need to know if you need to just speed up or if you really want to try to beat, you know, their long game cards. But, I mean, that comes down a lot to your personal play style, too. Like, that's usually why I don't play aggro. Like, if it gets to turn three, turn four, they play a card and I'm hosed, I hate that feeling more than anything.
Yeah, you're not
so
a
I play control.
Are you smoke, right?
No. Yeah. So
I'm a heavy smoker.
But I'm okay. Yeah, I can miss a few rounds.
I also like to eat during a tournament, possibly use a restroom without having to ask a judge, you know. So, you know, there's some real merits to aggro.
I just, like I said, something about that feeling of just like, I would rather play 25 turns where I always have a live draw than hit that wall of like, oh, well, I'm done, you know? And I'm building Infect, so that's as a player, that's something I got to get a little bit better about. But, like, you need to know that about yourself.
You'd be surprised how well that deck grinds, by the way.
That's kind of one of the things I'm like, blue-green, it's got blue in it. It's got some counter spells on the side. I can jam it. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, that's something you need to know about yourself as a player too, and that's the best way to find it out, is in these grindy gauntlets. Like, and go as far as setting a timer for 50 minutes. I mean, play turns. Like, just emulate the whole process if you want, because you really need to make sure, like, you don't know how you're going to feel after 5, 6, 7 rounds of Magic, and that's what you need to know. Am I still going to be able to pilot this deck after 7 rounds? Am I still going to like it, or am I going to be ready to throw this thing at the wall after 4 rounds of sideboarding? Like, you know, just really put yourself through it so that way when money's on the line, you've already been there, you know how you're going to feel, you know what to do. Yeah. I mean, yeah, nothing beats it.
Yeah, gauntlets are real good. Something I think is probably important when you're thinking about a gauntlet is, obviously, it's amazing. Getting reps with other decks is really invaluable. You just can't beat knowing how to play a deck, all that stuff. But there's some pitfalls to it, too, is, you want to pick a gauntlet where we were talking earlier, like, you can't beat all the decks, especially in Modern, depending on what you're in. So you want to pick the deck that is going to show up the most, like an Absent Aggro in Standard or whatever the hottest deck was last week will probably show up in some number. You want to be ready for that, some variants of that. So picking your gauntlet is really important. You don't want to get too down the rabbit hole with weird little ideas. And you want a pretty stock deck.
Ad nauseum. You don't want to jam ad nauseum. Yeah, like we were talking,
all 0.5% of the field, I'll be ready. That's not how you want to kind of go into your mindset playing. And then another thing is, like you were talking about, it's good to get reps with it. But keep in mind, too, don't think you're going to play against Splinter Twin. It's like, oh, my matchup's great. But none of us here, like, say, in this room, play much Splinter Twin. Whereas, you know, the guys that are jamming this deck, that's their baby. That's just like your deck's your baby. Gauntlets are amazing. You can't beat it. But just keep in mind that the play, the way that, you know, your gauntlet partner is playing the deck versus how someone in a tournament is playing. Like every time I watch someone play Living In on camera, I cry. Like I go cry. It's like a crying game. I'm in the shower just, why are they doing this to my deck? Why would they play that? So, you know, I was really excited. The last GP, actually, I saw someone playing Living In. I was like, oh, that player is great.
Nice.
And then I watched him like do something that was, because it's easy to try to get greedy with Living In, but that deck is not powerful enough to do that. Just take your small incremental advantages, put the pressure on. But he got greedy and died, and I was like, oh my, this is, and he didn't. perform day two of the Grand Prix. So, but I was hoping. But that being said, just really keep in mind, like, you know, people that play the deck all the time, a lot of times,
play it a lot differently.
They're going to play it at a little bit higher level, so just keep that in mind.
Yeah, I mean, that's like, you know, usually we have Alex here with us, and he is definitely, I mean, he's the tempo Splinter Twin player all day, and like, man, like, we've talked about this before, but I grinded. He was playing Grixis Delver for a while, and I jammed tons of games with him, get paired up against it at Richmond, the Modern event over Richmond. I destroyed the guy, like, because he, you know, he was newer to the deck, and he would just constantly make plays where I'm sitting there looking at my hand like, well, that was completely wrong. Now I'm going to do this. Yeah. You're hosed. Yeah, that guy's gone. So, yeah, I mean, be aware of the skill level of the people you're playing the gauntlet with, and definitely try to get players that play the deck a lot, that know the deck well.
You 2v1 it up, too, where you have two minds, like, kind of grinding over the decisions a little more just to make sure.
Walk through the lines of play, like, and talk out loud. I mean, that's a great point. Get someone next to you that knows either the deck you're playing well or the one you're playing against well, and just kind of walk through, like, okay, I'm thinking about doing this and this and this. They'll interject and say, okay, well, no, you want to do this instead, and here's why.
Or think about this, or what do you think? Yeah. You know, even if you're not perfectly on point, at least you get a couple ideas to maybe formulate a clean line. But
yeah, absolutely. That way you kind of understand why you're going through these, you know, things. And I mean, you may be working towards an interaction that doesn't exist. I'm trying to play, you know, rest in peace to hose this. I'm like, well, that doesn't really. I mean, as a scape shift player, like, I can't tell you how many times bad sideboard cards get brought in. And they're like, I mean, even like Blood Moon is annoying, but it is not. There's so many bounce effects. Like, all right, you bought yourself a turn or two. But like, if that was your goal, was to play that and me scoop, that's not happening.
But you didn't
like,
even buy yourself a turn either, because you burned a card and you burned 3 mana.
True.
You burned your turn up to
play. Used the turn exactly.
How many turns did you really buy? You kind of slowed your own, you know, tempo down.
Especially with Scapeshift, where like, I am the late deck. Yeah. I love the late turn. So sure, if you're wasting early
take
turns.
Take a turn off, big man. No problem. Yeah,
absolutely. Oh, a Moon over a Deceiver? Solid. Yeah. That's great. But yeah, so I mean, make sure people know what's up and take it with a grain of salt. If you don't have a Jund player hanging around, then get someone to pilot it so you kind of know, but maybe don't burn 5 hours playing that over and over and over if you're not going to get much more than the basics out of it. Yeah. Jam against the people who really know their stuff. Yeah, that's a solid point. But yeah, I mean, we're coming up on time. Does anybody else have any last points or anything they want to talk about for what we've covered?
My biggest thing would be don't shy away from your bad matchups. Yeah. In these gauntlets or anything like that. Yeah. Right. No, yeah, sure. Okay, it's terrible to lose, but you need to keep seeing how that deck gets played, because you may find, or, you know, a buddy of yours might think of, hey, have you thought about putting this in the sideboard?
Yeah. Yeah, and the inverse of that. Don't play the good matchup all day either. Don't live in happy land where everything goes the way you want it to. Be prepared for people to fight your combo and everything. Yeah, anybody else?
Willie Edel was the one that got put into the Hall of Fame. He's an amazing Brazilian Magic player. And I want to thank all you guys. You guys are beautiful people. Thanks for having me.
Really fun, man. Thanks for joining us.
I really enjoyed this.
As soon as Chris said you're in town, I was like, yes, get him on the cast. Immediately. I'd love to hear his thoughts on this stuff.
I got out of work and I just saw quickly Ryan's going to be in town pop up on the Facebook chat. It's like, are we getting him?
get him in here. This has consumed our life now. Everything is from a podcast perspective.
It's cool. It's really fun. It's cool you guys are doing this.
Yeah, definitely. Well, we look forward to enjoying it too. Come back in town sometime. We're working on the remote setup too, so we can remote you in from time to time. I like to mix it up here so people get different perspectives. But all right, that is going to do it for us. Do we have any notes? The poll's still up, right, on the site?
Yeah, the poll is still up. It's not getting a lot of attention. Not exactly sure. I mean, pretty much all split. We got three different submissions so far, and that's about it.
Yeah, so, I mean, if that's something you're interested in, and if that's something you're not interested in, man, shoot some feedback and tell us that idea is dumb so we don't do it. If you like it, or if you're one of those three submissions and you're dying to hear it, let us know that too so we know which way to take this thing. But yeah, other than that, I mean, that's all the notes we got, so that'll do it for this week. We'll see you next week.
Oh, snap.